Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
When friends go on a trip, you know things are going to get pretty wild. And the new film Joyride, about a whirlwind adventure in China, does follow in that tradition. But at the same time, these friends are dealing with issues of identity and family that maybe don't show up in every movie about hookups and getting really high and ultimately learning that there's nothing like a really good friend. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Joyride on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is Kristen Meinzer. She co-hosts the podcast The Daily Fail and is the co-author of How to Be Fine. Hey, Kristen.
Hi, Linda. How you doing?
I'm good. And podcast producer and film and culture critic Kate Young is with us. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
And also with us is NPR producer Mallory Yu. Hey there, Mallory.
Hey, Linda.
So Joyride begins with hard-charging attorney Audrey, played by Ashley Park, and her longtime slacker best friend Lolo, played by Sherry Cola. When Audrey is sent to Beijing to land a business deal, she brings Lolo along. And because Audrey was adopted by her white parents and doesn't know much about her birth mom in China, Lolo encourages her to use the trip to find out more. Lolo also brings along her cousin Deadeye, played by Sabrina Wu. The party is also joined by Audrey's college roommate Kat, played by the Oscar-nominated Stephanie Hsu, who's a successful actress working in Beijing in an over-the-top historical drama, let's just say. What happens from there? Disasters, drugs, musical interludes, appearances from some reliable supporting players like Ronnie Chang as a club-loving businessman is often pretty in step with films like The Hangover or Girls Trip. But there are also story elements about Audrey's adoption, how it has affected her identity, what she does and doesn't have in common with her friends, and some other much less familiar aspects of who these friends are. Joyride is directed by Adele Lim, who co-wrote Crazy Rich Asians. The movie is in theaters now. Kristen, I'm going to start with you. I am so curious to hear what you thought about this movie.
Well, I want to open this by saying, as you know, Linda, I am a transracial Asian American adoptee myself. And in my opinion, Joyride is absolutely the smartest, most nuanced, funniest depiction of what it is like to be me.
That's delightful.
That I have ever seen on film. And I'm including documentaries in that. I've seen several documentaries. I've seen foreign films. But this is the most accurate. In my life, I've experienced, you know, racism, assumptions from all sides, from non-Asians, from other Asian Americans, from Asian people in Asia. I know what it's like for certain people to refer to me as white and others to see me as foreign. And I know what it's like to have certain friends try to push me to find my biological parents when I'm not even sure that's something I really want to do. The movie touches on all of that. It doesn't do it in a preachy way, which I appreciate it. It does it in a funny way. It doesn't try to show a perfect happy ending either, which I really appreciate, because what is a happy ending in this situation? And they don't try to show or tell us what that is supposed to be. And one last thing I just want to add here. In addition to being really funny and really snappy, it's not overly long. I have had it with 2-hour and 3-hour movies. This is a tight movie. It's just over 90 minutes. And I was laughing the whole time, and I was so grateful it did not take up my whole day. I loved it.
Yeah. The scourge of 2-hour movies that should be hour and a half movies, not to mention 2.5-hour movies that should be 2-hour movies. Ugh. Real tough. So I agree with you. I want to go to you next, Mallory. What did you think about Joyride?
Like Kristen, I had so much fun. Like, not just the over-the-top shenanigans, but also the way that all the characters just bounced off each other, particularly the way that Stephanie Hsu's Kat and Sherry Cola's Lolo repel off of each other. I think all of us can kind of understand that childhood best friend versus like new college best friend and that kind of like jealousy and tension. There were some joke sequences that I found kind of cringy, like over the top drug benders are never really going to be my thing.
No, me neither. Me neither.
But there were also a lot of bits that spoke to me as a Chinese person. Like, there's a scene in which Ronnie Chang is offering shots to Audrey and everyone, and they bring out these shots. And as soon as I saw them on screen, I was like, oh my God, those are century eggs. I'm also not a fan of throwing up, and this movie is the only one in which I found that bit to actually be funny. I also really found that it was really refreshing to see, like, the breadth of Asian woman in this movie and how every single character had a different relationship to their Chineseness or their Asianness. Mm-hmm. Also, completely superficially, the last thing I'll say is I loved that there wasn't a single white guy who was presented as a possible hookup or love interest in this movie.
Thank
like,
you. Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Crazy Rich Asians hottie Chris Pang specifically. Mm-hmm. Was I being pandered to a little bit? Yes, definitely.
A little bit.
Did I care? Not at all. So yeah, I enjoyed myself a lot. And I hope every showing of this movie is just full of groups of girlfriends hooting and hollering at the shenanigans on screen.
Yeah. All right. I want to know from you, Kate, what did you think about Joyride? You look so happy.
I mean, I have to concur. I had such a blast at this movie. I mean, I am a Black West Indian immigrant. This is not my personal experience, but that's actually a large part of why I really liked it, because this movie has nothing to do with me, but it still resonates with me on a really deep level. You know, we talk about how the more specific you make something, the more universal it becomes. And that was 100% my experience. You know, Mallory was talking about that, you know, best friend tension. Like, I've definitely been there. The, no, she's not your best friend. She's my best friend. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've all been there. And I think that the way that this deals with those, like, very universal experiences while also finding a way to filter them through the lens of a specific identity was honestly brilliant. Like, I had an incredible time. I cannot wait for people to see this movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie, too. I thought it was very funny. I think all these performers are delightful. I want to ask one question, particularly to Kristen. I'm curious about your thought about this. One thing that did occur to me while I was watching it was, you know, if you see The Hangover, right, the jokes in it are lots of different things about lots of different things. Mm-hmm. The jokes are not about the fact that they are white guys, right? Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you think. And this is not a knock on the movie at all because of all the stuff that we have already talked about. But I did wonder, like, what's the balance between, like, you also want them to be able to make jokes about all kinds of stuff as opposed to, like, I feel like the representational elements are really foregrounded, which obviously is wonderful. And I'm so delighted that you thought it was great. But I did have these moments of being like, I wonder what this movie would look like if there were a million movies like this. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's always that challenge.
Right.
Are you doing every single thing right? Are you representing everybody in the best possible way? No one movie can do that. As you said, Hangover can do whatever it wants to because every movie has a bunch of white guys in it, right? It's not trying to represent what manhood is or what whiteness is to all people universally. This movie, I think, does a really good job with that balancing act because it shows such a variety of Asian identities, as Mallory was saying, and relationships with people within themselves of what it means to be Asian, and how there can just be micro differences between what I experience versus you experience and so on. And I do want to add that as much as I laughed, and I was snort laughing, I was that person snort laughing, I want to add also that by the end, I was crying so much that my surgical mask was filled with tears. When the closing credits came on, I was crying.
What a vote in favor of the movie.
So I laughed very hard. I saw a lot of attempts at nuance, and I cried quite a bit.
Yeah.
One thing I want to ask you guys about, because I'm so curious what you think, is like, I want to know what you thought about the character of Deadeye, who to me, when they started showing Deadeye, I had so many fears about what this character was going to turn into. Is this like the Zach Galifianakis sort of, if you think in the broad strokes of these kinds of wacky trip movies? Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed by the fact that I think, although certainly Deadeye starts off as a character who is mostly broadly comedic, they do like eventually bring a lot of heart to that character mm-hmm. without really mm-hmm. changing who they are.
Yeah, I loved Sabrina Wu in this movie. I loved that character. I'd watch a whole movie of just their shenanigans, like them kind of coming into themselves. Like you, Linda, I had the same kind of fears when I first saw them on screen. I was like, oh, are we just going to get a bunch of jokes about this, like, slightly neurodivergent coded character who is kind of awkward and weird and definitely obviously has a big crush on Audrey. But then I think the way that they kind of pull out their role in the group was really lovely and like really showed that this person who we thought of as like the outsider or the tag along kind of is actually kind of the linchpin of the whole group and sort of is what helps balance out these other really big dynamics. I also have to say that I loved that this character goes on an implied gender journey by the end of the movie. It's one of those things that if you blink, you miss it, but I didn't miss it and I knew. And it's one of those like, if you know, you know kind of things. And it just suffused me with this warm kind of like, oh, same hat feeling.
Yeah, I really like that character too. And I think a big part of why is because, like you were saying, Mallory, they definitely felt coded as neurodivergent to me. And I think there's an easy way in which characters like that are often kind of, they remain that kind of like weird character on the sidelines. Yep. And I think that with this story, we get a full arc for them that takes them all the way from feeling out like an outsider and recognizing that people see them as an outsider mm-hmm. and finding a way to navigate that. And I really like that they made it a point to show that just because they're neurodivergent or maybe doesn't mean that they can't find their people.
Right.
And as far as character arcs go, I like that all of the characters get a chance to evolve in this mm-hmm. movie. Deadeye obviously just is delightful and there's so much heart in that character, but all of the characters get to evolve in some way or another. I'm not saying everyone gets a perfect happy ending. That would be boring. But everybody gets to go from, you know, A to D, if not A to Z, or A sure. to something. And I mm-hmm. really appreciate that because they're all very different. They all have different challenges in life. They all have, you know, a different set of skills that they're moving through the world with. And I'm just going to say this as somebody who's wanted it my whole life. We get to mm-hmm. see Asian people who are total slackers also yes. who are leeches. We get yeah. to see, we even get to see characters like that have an arc. It's not just kids who were straight A students who played the violin, but it's every kind of mess that we get to see have an arc here.
And I want to say one other thing about Deadeye, and I have to credit our frequent panelist and my friend Ronald Young Jr., who we were talking about this gender journey that Mallory mentioned. And Ronald was mentioning there's also like potentially the suggestion of a sexuality journey that's very uncommon in film, because I think there's one sequence that you can read as maybe Deadeye is asexual. And that is something that you really do mm-hmm. not see very much representation mm-hmm. of in film. But there is this sense that like they derive community and pleasure and kind of stimulation from maybe other things. And I, particularly once he said that to me, really appreciated that as potentially another avenue of people you just don't see enough of in movies. So I appreciated that too.
I do want to talk about some of these performances a bit, though. I think that the cast is really fantastic and I had a great time with them. I think the biggest surprise for me was Stephanie Hsu, because I think obviously the thing we most know her for is Everything Everywhere All at Once. In this movie, she gets to be much more raucous, much more broad, and it's really, really funny. I think the dynamics between the group as they change are also really fascinating. You know, there's a bit of a blow up that happens towards the last third of the film in which there are consequences for all of them. Kat has to tell Audrey, like, there are more important things happening right now. And it is not all about you. To me, that was really interesting because what's happening to Audrey is not important at all. It's a really big deal, actually, and I would be losing my mind. Mm-hmm. But what Kat's going through is a lot bigger than that. And she wasn't able to see that perspective. And I'm glad that the film made a point of telling her, even though she is the main character, that you're being selfish.
Yeah, I also really like the way that Kat and Lolo's dynamic also shifts and changes mm-hmm. in a way that I also found really, really interesting, because I've always been a person who has been a little hesitant to mix different groups of friends that I've made mm-hmm. over the years. This movie really kind of shows the dangers of that, but also the really interesting, different, unique relationships that your friends can form with each other is also really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I just really liked seeing this variety. And I think it goes, Linda, to, like, I'm not worried about race or ethnicity being part of a joke or part of what's funny about a movie if it's not the only joke that's being made, right? And if there are a bunch of different types of jokes about different types of relationships to your race and ethnicity, that's where the nuance comes in, right? It's the in-jokes, like the things where you're winking, like if you know, you know. The mm-hmm. references to Bai Jo in this movie, every time I heard that word, I just had like a visceral physical response, because that is a horrible type of alcohol to drink. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you know why Audrey is having this physical response, but it could just be, you know, something funny. And I love that kind of really, really specific joke.
Yeah. And I will say another thing that I appreciated about this script is that at least three out of these four characters are very, very horny. Yes. There is no...
That might be an understatement.
There is nobody to apologize to, even though it sometimes seems like maybe there's gonna be. Mm-hmm. There's nobody to say that you're sorry to for the fact of being super horny. It is an unpunished, unjudged, rapacious desire for sex that I think mm-hmm. is really, really rare in movies about women. I don't know. Kate Ilkic, maybe you don't believe me.
I mean, I would argue that the result of their travel arrangements counts as a punishment.
Reasonable.
Yeah. But I mean, that is something that is fairly quickly resolved. But I agree with you. I think part of what was so fun for me about Stephanie Hsu's character is that I would say arguably she's the most horny, specifically because that is something that she is trying to repress in herself.
Yeah, right. I think that's fair.
And it leads to some extremely fun sequences. And part of the joy of films like this is that you get to have the infamous, is it grapefruit scene in Girls Trip?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's that kind of thing where, like, you're laughing at it and it's funny, but it's also kind of cringe, but also it's hilarious. And it's, like, a lot of that happened in this mm-hmm. movie. I really enjoyed that because, like, who doesn't love to laugh about stuff like that?
Well, and it's not just that they aren't, like, punished by the story, but they're not really judged by each other for that mm-hmm. either.
Yeah.
They all kind of get together and are like, cool.
And it's sort of like the response to the consequences of their hookups is just like, meh, worth it.
And I have to say, I'm really happy that Ashley Park got to be one of the horny characters, because mm-hmm. oftentimes in this kind of role that she's playing, you would have to just be the straight man all mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. Even though she is much more the straight man than the other characters, she is given the opportunity to be really horny, to do some really gross out stuff.
Yeah.
I like it when they don't just make the main character the straight man. She got to do those other things, especially as somebody who really enjoyed her on Girls 5 Eva and Emily in Paris, where she frequently is the wacky side character. I didn't want all of her wacky to be erased. And we do get to see a little bit of that in here too, which I really enjoyed.
And so often you get a binary between like a really serious work-oriented person and a fun person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you would have gotten maybe like she would be like, you know, tempted to have some hookup, but then she'd be like, oh my gosh, what am I becoming? And like, there's just, that just doesn't.
And she never does that. Not even close.
It's not how they think about sex in this movie. And I was super, super grateful for that and admired it a lot. Well, as you can tell, we all very much enjoyed Joyride. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Tell us what you thought about Joyride. Up next, what's making us happy this week?
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
On NPR's Throughline.
We cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt. Because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Kristen Meinzer, tell me what's making you happy this week.
All right. So at the time of the recording of this episode, there has been a lot of information coming out about Supreme Court decisions that makes me want to shake my fist at the sky and yell and point at people and say, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. I know the world is more nuanced than that. But at this moment, when I am trying to cope with all of this and when I am pointing fingers in my own mind, I just want to listen to a podcast that does the same thing, that unapologetically says it's your fault, and that's why I have been enjoying The Alarmist podcast. So in each episode of The Alarmist, they look at a historical event, a pop culture moment, and they ask the question, who is to blame for this? For example, whose fault is it that Judy Garland died at the tender age of 47? Whose fault is it that Princess Diana died tragically the way she did? On The Alarmist, they present a number of theories, a lot of them totally absurd, but many of them actually nuanced and spot on. And then they laugh about them as they come up with a verdict. It is a funny show that actually also has real information. And it's just perfect for this moment I'm in right now where I just want to say, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. Again, it's called The Alarmist, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I love it. Thank you very much, Kristen. All right, Mallory, you, what is making you happy this week?
All right, what's making me happy is a documentary. It's called Everybody by filmmaker Julie Cohen. It focuses on the lives of three intersex activists named Sean Seifel-Wall, Alicia Ruth Weigel, and River Gayo. Intersex meaning they were born with variations of male and female sex characteristics. In the documentary, they all talk about like the various flavors of, you know, shame and stigma they felt growing up and the surgical procedures that they went through. It's a bit of a heavy watch, but there is this moment of joy that I keep thinking about. It's of archival footage of the first known organized meeting of intersex activists in the mid-90s. And it was just really striking and lovely to see a group of people being really open and proud of who they were, and also openly angry about how they had been and were being treated. If you've ever wondered what the I in LGBTQIA stands for, this documentary is a good place to start. It's called Everybody, and it's currently in theaters.
Thank you so much, Mallory. People tell me about the most fascinating things in this segment, and I wind up with a long list. All right, Kate Young, tell me what is making you happy this week.
This week, what is making me happy is the 2001 film, Two Can Play That Game. It stars Vivica Fox and Morris Chestnut, Anthony Anderson, Monique. Mm-hmm. Got an all-star early 2000s black cast. In this movie, Vivica Fox is walking us through the rules to help keep your man in line, essentially. And she's known in her friend group as the person who always has the answer. She's the one with the man who doesn't misbehave. Only to then find out that her man is in fact misbehaving. We get a fun little plot of men versus women, power dynamic shift, really fun comedy that holds up surprisingly well, given that it comes out in 2001. Aside from some light slut-shaming, it's extremely funny. Gabrielle Union plays, as Vivica says, a bona fide hoe. It's really, really fun. Everyone looks top of their game. Everyone's gorgeous. No one has aged. Vivica Fox is killing it. The only thing that upsets me about it is that allegedly she's 28, and it really upsets me. She's got a 3-car garage. So that's about it.
So that is two can play that game. Thank you very much, Kate Young. Sometimes I forget on this show, I'm not going to lie, what I have already told you was making me happy in some past week. I've been doing this show for 13 or something like that years. But what is making me happy this week is a YouTube series called Mystery Menu that is done by the great and wonderful Sola L. Whaley and her husband, whose name is Ham. They do a thing where this is not part of the New York Times cooking section. It's on their YouTube channel. And essentially, they are brought a grocery bag containing a secret ingredient. And from that secret ingredient, they have 1 hour to make dinner and dessert. And sometimes it is something like bananas or potatoes, something that is like relatively an ingredient. Other times it is something like hot dogs or Jell-O. And so, yes, in some ways, it is structured similarly to certain other cooking TV shows and projects that are out there. Like, oh, can these people rustle something up? What makes this show so delightful and intoxicatingly great to watch is that their relationship is so, I mean, they're both chefs. They have expertise that is extremely well matched. And in a lot of relationships, that does not work, right? Mm. You got to know about one thing. I'm going to know about a different thing. They know about the same things. And what you see between the two of them is this explosively great creative chemistry. And I was telling somebody the other day, it's like colleague goals, it's romance goals, it's friendship goals, and it's also like the restaurant you want to go to goals. So I find watching this show so incredibly like restful, and I cannot say enough about how much I love Mystery Menu. Again, it is called Mystery Menu. It is part of the NYT cooking section and YouTube channel. So that is what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. One last thing before we go. The upcoming Barbie and Oppenheimer face-off at the box office got us thinking about some of our favorite pop culture matchups, and we want your votes on what's better. Think Batman versus Superman, Britney versus Christina. You'll hear the results in an upcoming episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can find a link to the survey in our show notes. That brings us to the end of our show. Kristen Meinzer, Mallory Yu, Kate Young, thanks so much for being here. This was so fun, you guys.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode is produced by Hafsa Fathima and Ramel Wood and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello, Come In provides our theme music. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all next week.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR. On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.